it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
We took it all. We brought them to our land. An endless night. Ember hot and icy cold. The rage of the earth. We made this curse. Carved it in the blood on our backs. We did not see. We could not, but she did. And in the end...
What will I become?
Senua Saga. Hellblade 2.
Play it now with Game Pass.
Hello and welcome back to the Stadio Podcast. I'm Yusuf Kwonga.
I'm Ryan Hearn.
Ryan, how are you doing?
Yeah, I'm all right. Thanks, man. How are you?
Good, thanks. You know, low-key weekend. But yeah, enough about me. Let's talk about the football.
Enough about you. We've been teasing each other before we were recording just about how absolutely not low-key Musa has been. But anyway.
Yes.
We hope everyone's staying safe, staying well, wherever you are in the world. Just a quick bit of admin. We're not going to do Premier League today because you and I are on Wright's house tomorrow.
Yeah.
So we're going to do Premier League with Ian. So Liverpool fans, please don't email us. We know you're top of the league. It's fine. Please don't email us. We're going to talk about it tomorrow. We'll also talk about two pretty horrific incidents over the weekend of racial abuse directed at black players. Mike Maignan and Milan against Udinese. They walked off the pitch, came back out and played, which I think we have thoughts on. And also, Coventry City's Casey Palmer had monkey gestures directed at him on the weekend as well.
Good for Mike Maignan and also good for his teammates in just taking that so seriously. I think it's, if you think how far this conversation has gone, the one that's been really striking about it is seeing teammates acting in full solidarity. That was really, I think, the part I take that's positive from this mess. Mm. They were absolutely there with him. And even after, like, he came back on the pitch, Udinese players, you saw quite a few going across, going, you okay, checking on him. And that was, you know, that was players of all races. It was great to see that the solidarity, actually. So that's my main takeaway.
Yep. We will talk about that with Ian on Wright's House. And we'll do some Arsenal Crystal Palace chat as well.
Yes.
More
yes.
Positive notes. Mm. Also, don't forget to check Counterpress, who have got themselves a hell of a weekend of Barclays WSL to get through.
They do. So, it was extra.
Oh my God. An incredible weekend in the WSL.
And an absence of muted celebrations, Chelsea Man U.
Absolutely no muted celebrations whatsoever. I'm very much looking forward to Counterpress to listen to that.
Yeah.
Just quickly before we move on, can we shout out Sam Mewis, who retired from football?
Yeah.
An amazing career. Unfortunately, she said in a statement that her knees can no longer tolerate.
What a shame. What a shame not to retire on your terms. Yeah.
I know. An incredible player and wishing her the best in retirement.
Yeah.
We're going to focus on the Bundesliga and La Liga today. But any other stuff you want to shout out? AFCON? Age Cup?
Just AFCON is in progress. Shout out to Equatorial Guinea, who are doing pretty well in the group of death, in a group of death.
I was going to say the group of death.
I mean, really, kind of. I mean, look, Nigeria and Ivory Coast in there. And Ecuador getting a top. They've been really impressive. And also Cape Verde as well. Cape Verde, who were slightly good at the, I mean, I've said this before. I loved them in the last tournament. I just felt they didn't put together everything in terms of the goal scoring. But for Cape Verde and Ecuador getting to be top of their groups after two games played, it's extremely impressive.
Are Egypt going to draw their way to the final? That's all I'm going to say.
Listen, wouldn't be the first time.
Mo Salah comes back for penalties. the final. He's gone back to Liverpool to treat his injury, and he said that if Egypt gets to the final, he may return.
Mm.
But looks like his AFCON is over.
Oh, real shame. Real shame.
Yeah. You said Asia Cup as well?
Yeah, just quickly, shout out to Iraq. Great win over Japan.
Mm.
Far more fancy Japan, so they go through. But yeah, really, really impressive from them, and just a great tournament there. But got to say, AFCON, in terms of upsets and shocks, AFCON still leads the way. It probably is the most, it's probably the tournament that offers the most shocks, because I think it has the least respect for reputation, if that's fair. Because they have a lot of players that play in Africa that will see European players that based in Europe coming back at South America going, this is a test you're not ready for. And I love that.
Also, it just gets people really hyped online.
Unbelievably.
Like, so hyped. Like, it's just that it's a completely standalone tournament, I think.
It totally is. It totally is. And, yeah. You know, well worth checking for all those who, have a moment. Oh, can I just say one last shout out? This is a bit of a random one. Shout out to Versus, because Versus, on their AFCON preview, dropped Kofi Olomide on the playlist. Congolese legend. And I saw that and I thought, yes.
Oh, actually, on that, I watched The Kitchen, right? And
yeah,
no spoilers,
but
Ian's character reveal
is
soundtracked by my favorite Ghanaian tune of all time.
Oh, really?
Yeah, K Frimpong.
That
it's a K Frimpong tune. And I was just like, the amount of worlds that are colliding right now. I was just
That's incredible.
Like, I just heard the intro. And I was like, get the fuck out of here. Anyway, let's get on to Bundesliga. Stick to football, please. Keep entertainment out of football, Booster.
We took it all. We brought them to our land. An endless night. Ember hot and icy cold. The rage of the earth. We made this curse. Carved it in the blood on our backs. We did not see. We could not, but she did. And in the end...
What will I become?
Senua Saga. Hellblade 2.
Play it now with Game Pass.
Miss Ogwonga.
Yes.
Is it now or never, Kusen?
Do you know what? The only reason I think it might be is because these players are playing so well under Xabi Alonso that I don't think he gets to retain the squad next season. That's the only reason.
Yeah.
That's the only reason. If they don't win this year, the quality of these players is such, and the youth of this squad actually in key areas is such that I think a lot of them are going to have their inboxes full over the summer. That's how well he's got them playing.
For those who missed it,
mm.
Bayer Leverkusen are 7 points clear at the top of the Bundesliga, having played a game more. Bayern have their rescheduled game against Union this week.
Yeah.
Bayer Leverkusen involved in an amazing game in Leipzig.
Yeah.
Going 1-0 down, 2-1 down, and winning in stoppage time at the end of the game. However, first, 15 minutes or so? Were probably the most that any team has dominated Leverkusen this season.
I would go further. I think maybe even half an hour. Do you know why I say that? Because the left half of that field was, I don't know, it was like watching penguins swim into an iceberg. I don't know how RB Leipzig did this, but they just overloaded that left flank and they dominated and they just couldn't. They do this really amazing, it's this amazing thing. They play like a 4-2-2-2, right? But it's like a pincer formation. So you have the two in this narrow, then it's not a narrow two, it's almost like a wide two, and they clamp you as you go through. I know you say 15 minutes, I feel like it was even half an hour.
The entirety of that first half, Leverkusen weren't at their best that we've seen them this season, but I think that they started to wrestle some possession, a little bit more control. Kind of about halfway through the first half. But that first period, especially because Leipzig scored so early.
Spectacular. Yeah.
Javi Simons' goal after 7 minutes was so good.
For those who haven't been watching him regularly, Javi Simons' been balling out for RB Leipzig, and this goal may be his best so far, considering
The
timing and the quality of it. And actually, you know, you talk about the early dominance, to your point about the first 15 minutes. If we're looking at the first 15, I think in the sense that pure suffocation of what Leverkusen do, that first 15 should have been 2-0 because Sesko has a chance, an easier chance, which he puts wide. He actually falls really well and just ciphers it narrowly wide of the post. And that would have been 2-0 within, I think, about 10, 11 minutes. And Leverkusen, given how the rest of the game went, I don't think they're coming back from that. I think if it's 2-0 then, the way that Rosa had them playing, and I think that Marco Rosa hasn't quite got the credit because everyone knows that Leipzig got great resources. But we've known from, can see from Man United, that great resources alone don't make a great team. The way that Marco Rosa had them playing against Leverkusen specifically was, it was spectacular. Like, you, it was one of those games where you saw two, like, you know, brilliant tactical minds figure each other out. And the only thing, I mean, this is one of those, this is a cliche, but it's generally one of those few games you can say where the halftime whistle saved Leverkusen. I really think it kind of saved them because the balance of the game and the intensity that they came out with after the half, I thought, was really striking. Like, I was watching this game, and I think maybe because
different
of
side second half.
I have a bit of a Leverkusen bias, I think, because I love the way that Xabi's coached them. I love what Moussa Diaby did there before. I love what Vince
I heard it's because you have a preference for clubs that get around the 50+1 rule. That's why.
Oh my God. But they got back into it, Leverkusen. They started getting the ball down the left a bit more to Grimaldo, who was outstanding. And I think, you know, part of the Leipzig strategy, I think, was also because they know that so much goes through him.
Mm.
And so they managed to attack down the left and unbalance the pitch. But I think Leverkusen got wise to that after sort of the first 15-20 and then started like spreading it. And then they got a couple of decent openings. The one thing that they struggled to do, which they really worked out the second half, and I think the key to turning was they managed to integrate Schick more into the game.
Yes.
So the first half, he was always a symbol of Leipzig's dominance in that first period. Patrick Schick's isolation was absolutely, I think, the key element.
Well, yeah, they just couldn't play. They've been playing. They've played so well, like with combination this season, Leverkusen, and they just couldn't really get into those positions where they've been hurting teams in the first half.
Right. Yeah.
And they constantly just seem to be worried about behind. I actually think Jonathan Tah played really, really well at the back.
He was bold
there were
as well.
A couple
of times he
was pulled out wide in the first half.
Yeah.
They get back into it in the second half. Early in the second half, they equalize and then they get stung on the counterattack from an absolutely unbelievable goal.
Mm.
The second Leipzig goal from a Pender was just like
Xavi Simons again instrumental.
Involved,
yeah, brilliant. Like this whole Appender, can I say shout out to Appender because it was -2 when the game kicked off, centigrade, not Fahrenheit, -2 centigrade. And not only does Appender like come out in short sleeves, he takes off the gloves the second half. So now he wanted all the smoke. He had an excellent first half, didn't get his reward. The second goal, the counterattack, was classic Marco Rosa. Like this was outstanding. It was like
watching
the perfect Venn
diagram. Those great Gladbach teams.
It was like the perfect Venn diagram of like the Rosa we knew best and the way that Leipzig had managed to get their counter going. Poulsen was really impressed the second half as well. Mm. But again, Leverkusen's resilience. This is the thing. They're not just a very good football team. They're not just a football team who've sustained the loss of Tapsoba to AFCON and a couple of others. They've lost, like, they've got big players out through injury. Boniface is out till April. So they've got, like, you know, they've got a very good squad in terms of quality, but it's not as deep as the Bayern one. And they just keep finding resilience performances. And the most impressive thing is how they play. You talk about combinations. Some of the passing patterns from a team that actually doesn't play together that often because of the absentees, from a team that lost Frimpong during the game.
Yep.
And made a seamless change.
Half an hour, like, right?
But in terms of playing style, you could just swap in and swap out.
Mm.
It's so impressive. It may be the most impressive thing Leverkusen do. I mean, not every player is irreplaceable. I don't think that Florian Ritz can be replaced without a huge drop off in quality. Everybody else.
They look so full of belief in a league that I think is kind of unstable.
Mm.
For example, that's Leipzig's second home defeat in a row, second defeat at home in a row. And, for all the talk of Dortmund's struggles, we'll just talk about them in a little bit, they've already reeled them back in, they're level on points.
Yeah.
Stuttgart have wobbled the last couple of games. Like, third and fourth place have had back-to-back defeats. Bayern lose at home to Werder Bremen for the first time in 32 games, I think it is. We'll talk about that in a little bit as well. But now, that run of form, still unbeaten, 7 points clear. These are the kind of buffers that you have to start building going into January, February with a Bayern side that could at any moment just kind of chase you down. But the difference between, say, for example, this and... I don't really want to say Dortmund last year because I don't think the Dortmund last year is a similar thing. But let's say Lucien Favre's Dortmund when that lead just got whittled down. I think the difference is a complete belief and focus and understanding with what the manager wants to do, but also a clear instant impact. You know, Jonathan Tah was saying afterwards about how he's made how much Xabi Alonso has made everyone better, and that. When you have a senior player like Jonathan Tah, who's been there for a long time, great. Yeah. Like he has improved massively under Xabi Alonso. How do I phrase this? Certain managers who have been players of a certain profile, let's say.
Yeah.
If they also back it up with tactical nous and they speak to players on a level that, you know, and man management and stuff like that, you can see a group of players here with Leverkusen who just really, really, really really fucking want to play for Xabi Alonso.
Yeah.
And Granit Xhaka, you know, went there to play for Xabi Alonso, and also because Leverkusen gave him like a pathway through to coaching. You know, it's incredible. Whether they win the league or not this year, actually, it's incredible how different this side looks to when he took over. Because they were kind of all over the place. And they look really solid. They've got the best defensive record in the Bundesliga this season. This feels like a win, even though they've had a couple of late wins on the bounce. Now, they won late last week. But these are the kind of wins that I think, I mean, we said it last week, right? That's the kind of win that will win you a title.
And they've had them back to back.
And the other thing as well. Yeah. And they won't have them every week. That's the thing. They won't need to. But like Leipzig away is a tough game.
In those conditions. Yeah.
And they've got Gladbach at home next. And then they go to Darmstadt. They have Stuttgart at home in the cup, and then it's the big one. So for anyone who wants to pencil in a Bundesliga game to watch this year, it's going to be, if you're in the UK as well, it will be on TV because it's outside of the blackout. Saturday, 10th February, 5:30 UK time, 6:30 German time, Leverkusen at home to Bayern. That is one of the biggest games of the season, because if Leverkusen win that game, I don't want to call it, but I can't see them dropping enough points to not win the league.
Well, the thing that's so impressive about them, and this is the thing to mention as well, they're unbeaten in all competitions this season.
All comps, yeah.
Which is unbelievable. Frankly, that's unbelievable. A stat that's almost as unbelievable is their goal difference. Because normally they're plus 36, same as Bayern. And the thing that's remarkable about this is normally in these title races, the massive advantage Bayern have is goal difference. We've seen it so often. And the thing that's hanging there psychologically is you just Bayern is blowing teams away week in, week out. So even if you're top of the league, Bayern are like, you know, you look over, you win like 2-1. You win 2-1 in the last minute against, I don't know, Freiburg, away at Freiburg. And like, oh, thank God we got that win. You look across the table, it's just like Bayern have like unleashed a 7-0 on someone. Mm. And it's because that goal difference is so strong, Bayern don't have any easy ways out. And it's really important that you look at like how good Harry Kane's been for them. This Bayern team, they're papering over the cracks in certain areas. And this is not to knock them. It's just that this morning I was looking at the kind of the mismatch in the teams and the resources. I looked at like, you know, biggest ever German transfer fees. And it, you know, it's dominated by Bayern Munich in a way that it's not dominated by, let's say, Manchester United or City. Like if the financial firepower of Bayern Munich is just in terms of players they can afford to bring in on those fees. Just, I'm not saying that to like knock Bayern, it's just in terms of the financial mismatch in terms of resources, what Leverkusen are achieving is extraordinary. And what Xabi's doing within that as well, just to get back to Xabi as well, just in terms of this game, watching the Xabi Alonso magic like settle in. After about an hour, the passing patterns started emerging and they didn't go away again. And there's the thing that Brighton did so beautifully last year under De Zerbi, a bit under Potter, but it went to another level under De Zerbi, obviously. The bit where they bait you. Like there was one bit where Tah has the ball on the halfway line and he's the last player. and the ball comes to him and he's being pressed by one player another straight behind. You lose it there and it's like panic stations. What does he do? Pings it out to the left. Ball goes around, circulates, intervenes his feet, and all of a sudden, what's that Simpsons meme? When the kid chuckles, I'm in danger. Yeah. And from absolute danger on the halfway line for Leverkusen, they're springing traps. It is just... And that was from half an hour towards the end, you were like, it wasn't inevitable that anyone was going to win this game, but you really felt like if anyone's going to put together a sequence to decide this game, it was going to be Leverkusen. You felt at that, I felt at that point, if Leipzig win this, and they could still win it, it will absolutely be against the run of play.
Yeah, in that second half, Leverkusen really, they were much better. Yeah.
Yeah, they took it to a level.
Yeah, definitely. So that put the pressure on Bayern, who then lost at home to Werder Bremen. As I mentioned before, it's the first time, I think, in 32 games, or Werder hadn't beaten Bayern in 32 games.
Mm.
And they lose at home. They also had a goal disallowed, Werder.
Oh, the great counter. Great counter attack.
For a foul on Musiala, which was a foul.
It was. Great finish.
But I actually thought this was quite a weird game because Bayern had loads of chances.
Mm.
They had all the ball. They could have easily won this 2-3-1.
Yes.
And it would have been calm. The problem is that you're seeing this season is that Bayern have got themselves into a position where they don't have any margin for error. Mm. And you're seeing it with, I think Tuchel was quite stressed after the game, was talking about how the team doesn't really have leaders. I saw Archie Rintut talking a little bit about this, about how it's still Thomas Müller who is always brought out to do questions, even if he's not playing the whole game. Tuchel's an easy target, I think, for a lot of people, especially in Germany. Like he's very, very prickly in German.
Toni Kroos is like that. There was a thing he said in the Champions League where they talked about a particular game. Have they just won the Champions League? They'd either just won. It was the reporter was like, "You made hard work of that." And Toni Kroos was like, "We've just won the Champions League," and he was like, and he said something like, "You know, basically, like you're German, like this negativity." He was super prickly about like going. I think it was very much about. I think Kroos feels underrated at home. Yeah. Actually, I think he feels. You look at Spain, specifically Madrid, and how he's revered there.
Was a bit of talk about whether he should come back for the Euros.
Wow. I mean, the way he's playing.
They could really do with him.
I mean, how can you afford? There's not a team in international football that can afford to leave out Toni Kroos. Not playing to his strengths. If you play to his strengths, there's not, and I say that caveat's really important because what will happen is, of course, if he gets played and he gets pressed out of creation, people will be like, oh, like, you said you should have played. Well, if you played to Kroos's strengths, he's in his position, arguably the biggest threat.
I think if Nagelsmann asked him back for the Euros, he'd come back.
Dude, yeah.
If he didn't, though, it'd be the most Toni Kroos thing ever.
It would
be like, like, what are you talking about? Like, I've got a summer off. You want me to go home and play my own country?
I've got a podcast to do.
It's like, hell no, I don't need that. Anyway.
Two hour podcast about he's underrated. Yeah.
let's go back to his former club. Let's wrap up on Werder Bremen because Mitchell Weiser.
Great segue.
Against his old club, Bayern. Didn't want to celebrate. Although, you know, that's actually quite like most, I think most ex-Bayern players really want to celebrate.
That was, you know, can I say as well, Alphonso Davies, a little bit exposed in terms of defending there for that goal. Lost the 50-50. He should have won. But Visa would deserve finish. And Werder absorbed so much pressure in that game. I mean, again, this is one of those ones where it's easy as a Bayern fan to draw the wrong conclusion of a bad result. Don't get me wrong. Yes, of course, finishing can improve and play through the middle can improve. And clearly Goretzka is not a favoured player necessarily because he was on the bench and Guerrero started in midfield. Maybe there's a slight injury knock he's got, but fundamentally the story about Goretzka and Tuchel is that they don't have the best, well, he's not using to best effect, I think. But that aside...
Can we just hype Weiser's goal?
Yeah, I was going to get to that. So Weiser wins the 50-50, cuts inside and rips it.
My God.
Into the roof of the net, because that's the only way you beat Neuer from there.
Well, really. Neuer had that unbelievable save
Yeah, he did.
It was in the first half, right? That deflection.
First.
And it was just like, he's still got it.
Yeah. Well, actually, the disallowed finish, I think, and Gima's disallowed goal in the first half.
So good.
I mean, to beat
Although
Neuer,
I expected him to miss well, that.
I think Neuer did. I think everyone in the stadium did, apart from Gima. And I was like, you have to go with full confidence.
Imagine that Neuer looking down at his gloves being like, my aura.
Yes. There's a thing they do on German TV. They have a percentage of goal likelihood, which is a bit ridiculous because like it is a bit ridiculous stat because they've got like Nathan Teller scoring the tap in. They said, oh, that was a 97% chance of like goal probability, which is a bit ridiculous. But I'd be fascinated to see the goal probability when someone goes through 1-on-1 against Neuer. I'd love to see what the stat is for that because I reckon that's definitely not 97.
You know, you have those things going around where people are like, oh, how many goals do you reckon you'd score in, like, if you played front for Man City in this season? I'm going to ask you this now, actually. You have 5 penalties.
Yeah.
You have 5 free kicks from outside the box, and you have 10 freestyle one-on-ones with Manuel Neuer in a training session. So that's 20 opportunities in total. 10 from dead ball.
Yeah.
10 from free, like, open play. How many goals do you think you're scoring against Manuel Neuer?
None. Not a single one. I'll tell you why. There's a great podcast, New Heights, and they talked about this. Like, if you had to tackle like a particular running back, how many times would you stop him? 100 attempts, how many times do you stop him? And the reason I tell you the answer is 0 is this. It's a stat that no one factors in. It's called demoralization. The first time that guy runs at you and he goes through you like a train, you're then thinking, I have to do 99 more of these. And by the end of that exercise, you're probably sobbing. And now here's the thing. If I had, let's say, the first attempt I had was outside the box against Manuel Neuer, and he catches it and laughs, I'm then thinking, he catches it and laughs, and then I think, or he just flicks over the back of his hand, even worse, he swats it away like a troublesome mosquito. Then I'm like, I've got 19 more of these. And then you've got friends at the side, oh, Moosey, yeah, we'll film it just in case you score. And they're recording it.
So 5 penalties, 5 to free kicks from outside the box, and 10 one-on-ones. Well, see, I was quite good at football, so I reckon I'd get 4.
There he is. There he is.
No. I mean, to be honest, do you know what I would do? I'd take the penalties first.
I knew it.
And I'd Panenka the first one, because no one would dare do that. No fucking amateur would dare Panenka Manuel Neuer in the first penalty against him. And then, you want to talk about demoralization? Manuel down bad.
Bad. The anger. I think if he'd be consumed by anger, this is the key. If you could get Panenka first, he'd be so consumed by anger, Ryan, that he'd be trying to get back to that. He'd be like, you know, he might rush you, actually. This is the thing. Do you know what? Do the penalty first and then do the one-on-one second. Because he'd be so angry, he'd try and take you out. He'd rush you in his head. He'd have that wild look in his eyes where he's all gone. Penalty first, then one-on-one, then penalty, and just do the psychological disintegration. All I'm saying is have a taxi waiting by the end because he'll chase you back to your car.
Just to clarify before anyone gets in my face.
The funny thing is that we both asked them, that's the most honest answers I think either of us have both given to a goalkeeper football in question.
No.
You would, Panenka. You would.
No, because being serious, like serious, if I got one against an elite goalkeeper, I would be delighted. Mm. Dude, it's Manuel Neuer.
He'd save my first one, then low self-esteem would kick in. That's what would happen.
For you?
Yes.
Anyway, this is a silly game.
It's a silly game.
Much like football.
Which we'll get back to. Right. So back to the Bundesliga, since we've digressed.
Have we digressed though? Because I enjoyed that talk, actually.
I did enjoy it.
Were we done on Werder Bremen?
Yeah, just a great win for them because they're low down the table. So this was obviously huge for them. It's the first win over Bayern in 15
forever.
Years?
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Yeah.
And they host Freiburg next, who got a late win against Hoffenheim. Hurler opens the scoring. Grifo scores the second. It's just like Freiburg bingo. And Christian Streich actually was like really, really hyped after the game. Like ran onto the pitch and everything. I've not seen him that animated for a while. It's a big, big win for Freiburg.
Yeah, they're in seventh. Not bad at all.
Well, they're 11 on points now with Eintracht, who gave away a 2-goal lead to draw 2-2 in the Hesse Derby against Darmstadt, a 95th minute equaliser for Christoph Klara in this game. Donny van der Beek looks like he's having a nice time though. Playing, starting, so playing well.
Yeah.
He was involved in the, I think it was the first Eintracht goal, kind of earlier on in the move. Other Manchester United players were having a good time. Jadon Sancho, who...
Yes.
Who played really, really well. He got just over an hour in this game for Dortmund. They beat Köln 4-0 in Köln. Two comprehensive wins in two, both away from home, clean sheets, admittedly against the bottom and second bottom sides in the Bundesliga,
yep.
But sides that we've very, very often seen Dortmund slip up against away from home.
This is it.
Nuri and Sven coming in on the bench.
Get the band back together.
I think it's given them a bit of...
I love it.
That's a cool bench, man.
Super cool. The only regret coming in the season, maybe they didn't do it sooner, actually. I mean, easy to say that now. I'd love to have seen Sancho there from the start of the season, but you know,
yeah,
that's my own bias.
I do recall us saying that he should go back a while ago.
It played out the way it was meant to.
Yeah, and also, I mean, they're not going to win the league this year now, so just making sure that they get, like, if they get third this season from where they were,
yeah,
that's be an amazing result for them.
I think so, and it's absolutely possible. It's absolutely doable.
Sancho won the penalty, which Niklas Füllkrug put away for Dortmund's second. Two goals for Daniel Malen. Can we just shout out though? By the way, Ian Mattsson's pass for the second Malen goal, which was absolutely otherworldly.
Yes, so good, so good. It was like Dalglish to Ian Rush. No, like. Kenny Dalglish would just split the game open and Ian Rush would just be strolling onto it and you knew it was over. Just the way that Marlon's body language opened up when the ball came to him. Like that was, you can tell how good the pass is by the body language of the striker. The shoulders just going back going, this is done, this is over. Loved it.
Just a really good win for Dortmund. Nice wins. Like it feels like it's been a while since they've had these nice routine wins and yeah, looking good. Let's take a quick break.
Let's do it.
All right, and before we do La Liga, can we just shout out Utrecht, who ended PSV's 100% start to the season in the Eredivisie. One all draw on the weekend means that PSV have dropped points in the Eredivisie for the first time this season. Although,
wild.
Surprise, surprise, they're still top.
Fair enough.
Who would have thunk it? Meanwhile, Jordan Henderson was watching on from the stands with his Ajax scarf on.
Big Ajax, win for them.
Yeah, Ajax won 4-1 at home. Yes, PSV is still 10 points clear of Feyenoord at the top of the Eredivisie. Ajax, though, are pushing for... They're fifth now. They're 3 points behind Alkmaar in third. So their recovery this season has been kind of pretty good. Yeah. But we're going to go to Spain because the top three were all involved in some wild games this weekend.
They were.
Let's start with the league leaders because they responded extremely well to Real Madrid's late win over Almeria, which we'll talk about in a little bit, by putting Sevilla away 5-1. After going from 1-0 down, by the way, the goal before the thrashing, Musa.
Yes. There were a couple of those moments. There were a couple of those, was it 1-0? A team that got absolutely hosed. I think it was in the Bundesliga, got hosed and they had a big chance at 0-0 and then got cooked. So yeah.
Yeah. Hat-trick for Dovbyk.
He's been great all year, actually.
14 goals in the league this season. And like I said, that was a big, big result because earlier in the day, Real Madrid had got away with one against Almeria.
Yeah, big time.
He went 2-0 up.
Mm. The one sad thing about this was that Arribas scored a great goal on the breakaway and did a muted celebration because he played for Real and the goal was then disallowed. And I just thought,
well,
that's the most tragic muted celebration of all time.
Well, we need to talk about all of this. So let's start with Ramazani's first goal, opening goal in what, 37 seconds it was for Almeria?
Yeah.
And then, I mean, Real Madrid, basically, for the whole of the first half, had all the ball and created not a lot. They didn't have a shot on target for the entire first half. And they went into the break 2-0 down because Edgar Gonzalez hit an absolutely unbelievable goal. in the top right-hand corner.
Yeah, ripped it.
But then Real Madrid came to play in the second half.
They did. Jude with a penalty, hotly disputed, it must be said. And then the Real Madrid comeback machine was in trail. Vinicius popping up, and then Carvajal with the late winner. It was funny because I saw Tony Rudiger do an interview in which he was talking about his ideal Real Madrid five-a-side. And the thing that he referenced most strongly was Carvajal's like fighting spirit. So I felt really appropriate he got the winner in this game.
Do you think they were lucky though? Because I think they got really lucky with some decisions.
They did. Like the penalty, Almeria couldn't believe that.
And then you had the goal, Arribas' goal ruled out for a foul on Bellingham, which...
The dispossession on the halfway.
Yeah, and he basically, Bellingham kind of gets caught with a hand.
Yeah.
But it's just literally like a normal, natural reaction, right? Or action. And it wasn't like an arm was swung or anything.
Right.
And
yes.
I think this is one of those that I'm 50-50 on these because obviously I think there's like a threshold, but then you make it even more subjective. I think they were lucky to get away with it, Real Madrid, because I don't think it was really.
No.
I don't think it was a foul. There was contact, but I don't think it was a foul.
You can tell from their celebration how lucky they felt.
Yeah.
Like in the course of the game, you can tell by the celebration at the end how much it...
Yeah.
But in terms of the specific incident, it's one of those ones, it wasn't like the Werder breakaway goal by Djima where you're like, you knew from the start, like you see when Musiala gets dispossessed, you're thinking at the time in real time, that's probably a foul. This one, I had to rewatch it to work out what had happened. And not because it was so quick, but because it seemed innocuous. So I think they were really unlucky with that goal, I think, Almeria.
Yeah. And they were also quite unlucky with the Vinicius Jr. goal because... It was below the shoulder. I'm not sure what the directive is from the La Liga in terms of handball, but it was very much like everyone was expecting it to get ruled out because he'd made, basically cross comes in and Vinicius, I think kind of Vinicius acted like he thought it was going to be disallowed
like
as well.
Like an own goal at first because I couldn't, the angle it comes off is so strange.
He didn't really celebrate and it's because it basically came off the part of the arm below the shoulder in between the shoulder and the shirt sleeve.
Yeah.
I think this should have been disallowed.
I think so.
And Garitano was just understandably getting more and more perplexed on the touchline.
Yeah, that was fair. Yeah.
And then there was the goal very, very late on.
Bellingham floats across with the head. I'm not sure if he was going for goal, just putting it back into the mix. Off the deep cross comes in, but then Carvajal popping up at the far post, rips it in the corner and bedlam ensues. But
Garitano had been sent off at this point, by the way.
Yeah, unsurprisingly. I mean, you know, there was a lot of frustration going around and rightly so, but yeah, really resilient comeback from Madrid. Really impressive.
They were very unlucky, Almeria, I thought.
Yeah. There was also the very narrow offside for the Bellingham goal.
Oh, yes. Yeah, oh my God.
Yeah.
What a goal as well.
Spiritually onside.
Fran Garcia didn't hold the run. And I don't know if that qualifies for a spiritually onside goal because it happened so early in the move, the offside, that it didn't really...
Fair enough, yeah.
You know what I mean? There are rules to this ridiculous shit. speaking of ridiculous shit, should we go to the Bia Marine?
Yes, wow.
Real Betis 2, Barcelona 4.
I mean, first of all, there may be three different players of the match. Isco, Ferran Torres and Lamine Yamal. They absolutely balled out. Ferran Torres, who is as prolific as we hoped he'd once be when he was at City, gets the first two and that's only the start. Like, there was there was so much going on in this game that Ferran Torres scores twice. The most exciting thing wasn't even in the first, it wasn't even that. It was Lamine Yamal's effort that came up, ripped off the post.
Wow.
That guy was absolutely, oh my goodness. Then Isco pops up with a lovely double. He's been playing some superb football.
He's been unbelievable this season.
Signed the new contract until 2027. Was at Sevilla last year. Only got a goal. They were like, yeah, the move didn't work. I think the contract got cancelled like last winter.
Well, yeah, because he was going to go to Union in the winter. And then he just basically was without a club, yeah.
Didn't work out at all. And he was like, hang on a minute. Just stay in the same city and see what else is popping.
Like if Sevilla let you go and Betis like, do you want to come play? Yes, I do. Yeah, I absolutely do.
Yeah. So he got a couple of goals.
Not just a couple of goals, though. First one of those that absolutely stayed hit. And the technique of it, the ball kind of bounced up, he hits this kind of rising, strikes it so sweet. It has to make its way past a couple of players to go in, but it was traveling at such force that they didn't like Like Araujo basically like sees it on the line, tries to gesture towards it. And I'm not sure if it's a bit like, I'm going to make this look like I can't get there because I really don't fancy having my like head in the way of this. But then the second one,
just cinched off, yeah.
The second one is so good because the ball is over his head height and it bounces right. And he jumps and kind of just like toes it over Iñaki Peña. Oh my God. But his all-round play was amazing all game.
He's still only 31, Ryan.
Dude. Like,
Isco has won everything multiple times. Well, not obviously international level, but yeah, certainly like a club level multiple times, and he's still only 31.
Yeah.
And it was always a question of fit with Isco, actually. Mm. He's a good example of a player whom the game has passed by. It's not because he lacks quality, it's because the very specific qualities he has, you have to kind of build a team around him. That's not a knock on him. It's just because of his size, actually.
Yeah.
But if you do get him working, he's spectacular.
João Félix comes on. He came on for Pau Kupasi, who was making his debut at centre-back, 16 years old. Actually, he's playing really, really well.
Yeah, they're really happy. They sound really happy with it, yeah.
We've talked about this, I think, before, about what's so perplexing about Barcelona is that they have such a great crop of youngsters coming through at the moment that they could abandon this, frankly, bizarre transfer strategy that they've implemented over the last couple of years, gone with a really good young core, and actually kind of like gone golden generation Mark II energy
with some great pieces
around it. You know what I mean? But João Félix comes on, scores an absolutely unbelievable goal.
Oh, the outside of the right foot from the edge of the box. Goodness. That's as good a finish as you'll see in the next few months. That is a special.
So good.
Yeah.
And then Ferran Torres completing his hat trick a couple of minutes later, and that was it.
And the pass by Lamine Yamal. This is, like I said,
has just been unbelievable this season when he's played.
You think of all the wide players that Barca have got and the fact they've got a 16-year-old who is matching all of them. It's unbelievable. You know the way that like people were just relying on Pedri for the central creative aspect and you couldn't believe they were relying on a player that young? But it's not like it's a problem for them. Same with Gavi. Gavi, Pedri, and Lamine Yamal, super young, three of the best young players in world football, all playing for Barca. And when Gavi gets back, that's going to be unreal. Really nice to see Gavi.
As well.
Nice to see Gavi. Yes. And nice to see Gavi celebrating and in the mix with this big like grey jacket on, just like hugging everyone out. It was nice to see him nursing his way back.
Get well soon.
Absolutely. Get back in the mix.
Oh, I miss him. I miss him so and his untied shoelaces. But yeah, great, great win for Barcelona and one that, eased the pressure, I think, a little bit on Xavi, who, there's a lot of talk wondering whether he'll last the summer.
Mm. Which is wild, actually. It's scary how quickly can you lose your, and this is a, lose your aura as an ex-player becoming a manager. It is scary. And this is why the Xabi Alonso approach of just, because we don't know exactly what he was offered because we'll never know the full extent of what his agents were sent when he took the Leverkusen job. But someone that just takes their time can't beat that. Because Xavi being in that job at Barcelona, because there was so much rebuilding to do, it's hard to work out how good he is or how good a job he's doing because there's just so many variables.
The pathway should have been Barca B.
You know what I'm saying, right? There's just so many variables there that I think any coach struggles that it's hard to get a good read on it. If you look at look at Marco Rosa now at Leipzig and you look at Dortmund and other, the other jobs, like you just think the underlying conditions have to be so solid and so firm. The fundamentals have to be good. And at Barcelona, they've just never been good.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying Xavi hasn't made problems. He has made mistakes, but just a hot mess, dude.
Yeah, but I also think that he's not done himself any favours by what style of football would you say Xavi wants his Barcelona side to play?
That's the most damning indictment.
You know what I mean?
For a coach and for a player who is so defined by identity, playing identity, yeah.
So that means Girona are a point clear of Real Madrid, who have a game in hand. Barcelona are 7 points behind Real Madrid in third. Quick shout for Valencia, by the way, who beat Athletic Club on the weekend, 1-0. Real Sociedad were back to winning ways. They beat Celta Vigo 1-0 away. And we're recording this ahead of Granada's game against Atletico Madrid. Oh, you wanted to shout out Antoine Griezmann quick? from last week, because we haven't spoke since the Copa del Rey last week.
No, we haven't.
Real Madrid beat Atleti 5-3, and we're not going to do it now. But Griezmann's goal in this game has led us onto something that you might be doing for the site.
Yes, I just want to talk about, so like Antoine Griezmann, that spectacular goal he scored made him Atletico Madrid's all-time standalone top goal scorer with 174 goals. And the reason that is incredible is that Griezmann isn't just a goal scorer. In fact, and this is the article I want to write, the thing that makes Griezmann so special is that he often spends a football match looking as if he's trying to do anything but score goals. Mm. And I don't mean because he's not an efficient finisher. He's really efficient. It's that he literally, there are times when he's got three different roles on a pitch. And I think the best example of this was, funnily enough, the World Cup campaign with France, where it was just like, I'll do whatever has to be done to win, whatever the team or coach requires. And he is the most Atleti player, actually. It's amazing that someone comes into Atleti from abroad and embodies the club as well as anyone who's ever played for them.
Mm.
So I'm going to write a piece about how much I just love his work ethic and how you could put him in any team. Ironically, apart from the Barcelona team he was in, put him in any team in the world and he'd find a role and find a way to improve them. I think he's, yeah, can't praise him enough. It's like a hyperactive Bernardo Silva, which if you see how hyperactive Bernardo is, that's saying something. So yeah.
Well, look out for that. And if you want to be the first people to know about that, go to stadio.football, scroll to the bottom, pop your email address in, sign up for our newsletter.
Yes.
That will be going out. That's going out this week?
Yeah, go out this week. Yeah, yeah.
But let's get out of it. We're going to leave that for today. Don't forget, we're going to do the Premier League and Mike Maignan and Casey Palmer incidents from the weekend. We're going to do those on Wrighty's House tomorrow. Musa, myself and Ian. Don't forget to check Counterpress for their wrap-up of the WSL from the weekend. And don't forget to check the Stadio Actors Players on Spotify. Speaking of which, playing out on. This kind of makes me feel like, so I was watching The Kitchen, right? And you know the cameo drop on when they're at the roller disco?
Yes, yes.
And it reminded me of this, which was a tune that we nearly played out on a few weeks ago, a track called What Do You Want Me To Do by Christopher J. And it's got roller disco energy.
Love that.
So we're going to play out on this one, and I reckon that'll do it. Anything you would like to add, Musa Okwonga?
Nothing further.
Are you sure?
Yes, I'm quite sure.
All right, everyone, much love. We will be back on Thursday.
See you then.
Do I want you?